Well, hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson, and you're listening to Family Talk, a listener-supported ministry. In fact, thank you so much for being part of that support for James Dobson Family Institute.
The authenticity of miracles in our current time in history is a fiercely contested belief in Christendom. Supernatural occurrences are hard to recognize and understand. It's even harder to believe that miracles are possible when God doesn't intervene during our difficult situations. Well, I'm Roger Marsh, and you are listening to Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. And on today's program, Dr. Dobson will continue his conversation with best-selling author and well-known Christian apologist Lee Strobel. They'll be talking about Lee's meticulously researched book entitled The Case for Miracles. If you missed part one of the program, by the way, you can listen at drjamesdobson.org/Family Talk and hear the broadcast in its entirety. Lee Strobel is a New York Times best-selling author of more than 40 books and curricula that have sold 14 million copies in total. He was a journalist at the Chicago Tribune and other newspapers, winning Illinois' highest honors for both investigative reporting and public service journalism. After probing the evidence for Jesus for nearly 2 years, Lee became a Christian in 1981. He went on to become a teaching pastor at three of America's largest churches and hosted the national network TV program Faith Under Fire. Currently, Lee serves as founding director of the Lee Strobel Center for Evangelism and Applied Apologetics at Colorado Christian University. Lee is married to his childhood sweetheart, Leslie, and they have two grown children and many grandchildren as well. Now, the interview you're about to hear was recorded at the headquarters of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute here in Colorado Springs. Over 30 people, invited guests, and ministry supporters were in attendance for this live recording. It took place in our main conference room. Everyone were all entertained and enlightened by Lee's presentation and Dr. Dobson's line of questioning. Let's go to part two of Dr. Dobson's conversation with Lee Strobel right now on today's edition of Family Talk.
You've written a book called The Case for Miracles, and this is a book that I think our listeners are going to be very excited to get a hold of, because there are a lot of questions about whether God still performs miracles. Many people think he doesn't.
That's right. A lot of people, like David Hume, the famous Scottish skeptic, said, well, miracles are impossible because they would violate the laws of nature. You can't violate the laws of nature, therefore miracles can't happen. And, you know, you have to look at the definition of a miracle. A miracle is not a violation of laws of nature. If I take this pen that's sitting here on the table and I drop it, the law of gravity says it will hit the ground. If I drop this pen and you reach in and grab it before it hits the ground, you're not violating the laws of gravity.
Right.
You're just intervening. And a miracle is when God intervenes in the creation that he made and does something that is extraordinary and points to him and his greatness and his goodness.
So the case for miracles starts there.
It does. It starts.
It still happens.
It still happens today. And you know what I did? This really surprised me. I hired George Barna to do a national survey, a scientific poll, and I asked people, have you ever had an instant in your life, some incident that you can only explain as being a miracle of God? 38% said, yes, I've had a miracle in my life. Now, if you extrapolate that out, that means 95 million miracles have happened among American adults. Now, let's assume that 95% of those are really just big coincidences, not really miracles. So just a big coincidence. That still means there's 4.7 million miracles just in the U.S. So I think God is still in the miracle business. And as I pursued this book, what I did is kind of unusual. I interviewed a skeptic. In fact, the number one skeptic in America, Michael Shermer, editor of Skeptic Magazine. And I allowed him to build it. Yeah, I mean, there's a credential for you, right?
Right.
And I let him build the case against miracles. So I spend the first three chapters building the case against miracles. And then I spend the rest of the book not only responding and answering those objections, but building the affirmative case that God is still in the miracle business today.
Let's talk about how miracles occur.
Yeah.
You may or may not agree with this, but it seems to me that When God does intervene in our lives mm-hmm. in a dramatic way, he usually does it in a way that preserves faith.
Oh, definitely. And builds faith.
He won't
faith.
Do anything that undermines faith because he values faith above all else.
Yeah.
That's the vehicle by which we can get a hold of him, that we can encounter him.
Yep.
And so you don't have a person with an arm missing and during the night an arm grows. Mm. Yeah, those kind of miracles rarely occur, but some of them are very dramatic.
They are dramatic, and they're a result of prayer, they're a result of faith. One story in my book's my favorite, because this story just blows my mind. It is the best documented miracle I've ever encountered. It involves a woman named Barbara, and Barbara was dying of MS. She was on her deathbed. She'd been to Mayo Clinic. She'd been suffering for many years. They said there's no more hope. She's in hospice. They put her in hospice in her home. She was going to die. She had a tube in her throat. She was breathing via oxygen coming from canisters in her garage. She was virtually blind. She could only see shapes and gray. Her one lung was collapsed. The other lung was only half inflated. Her diaphragm was mostly paralyzed. She had not walked in 7 years. Her legs were atrophied. Her body was curled like a pretzel. Her fingers were touching her wrists. Her feet were extended. She couldn't even put them flat on the floor. She was in her last days of life. One of her doctors said she was as sick as any human being I've ever seen. Hmm. Somebody calls a local radio station, WMBI, the Moody station in Chicago, and says, would people please pray for Barbara? We know that 450 people at a minimum began to pray for her because they wrote letters saying, I'm praying for Barbara. Well, she's in her bed. She has two friends who are there who are reading some of these letters of encouragement that these praying people were writing to her. And Barbara hears a voice coming from the corner of her room. There's no one else in the room. It was a man's voice. She knew it was God. And the voice said, get up, my child, and walk. They could tell, her friends could tell she was agitated. Something was going on. They removed the tube from her throat. Said, what's going on? She said, go get my mom and dad. God just told me to walk. She didn't wait. She virtually jumped out of bed. She had not stood in 7 years. Her mother comes running in. She falls to her knees. She grabs her leg. She says, you have calves again. Her calves had come back instantly so that she could stand. She looked. Her hands returned to normal. Her feet were flat on the floor as they hadn't been in 7 years. Her eyesight was instantaneously healed. Her and her father began dancing around the room together. That night at the Wesleyan Church where she attended in Wheaton, Illinois, they had a service, and she showed up at the service. And when the pastor said, does anybody have any announcements, she came walking down the aisle.
Oh,
and
man.
All people knew was her in her wheelchair. That's all they ever knew of her. And she's walking down the aisle, and people began singing Amazing Grace. How sweet the sound, who saves a wretch like me. I once was blind, but now I see. That next day, she went to her doctor. He said later, I thought it was a ghost. Because there's no way she's walking toward me down this hallway. Two doctors wrote books about it because they were so flabbergasted. They both say this is an undeniable miracle. And so here we have a incredibly well-documented medical case of instant healing. This is not spontaneous remission that can happen sometimes in an illness because that generally happens over a period of time. And often the healing is not permanent. It will come back. She's now 37 years later married to a pastor. He's a pastor of a church out in Virginia. I spent time with both of them. And she's healthier than I am. You know, you look at that and you go, how do you explain that? How do you explain that voice telling her to get up? That'd be like a voice telling you, get up and fly. You'd say, what are you, nuts? I can't fly. She couldn't walk. She stood in 7 years. So how do you explain that other than this was God reaching out? And I said to her, why you? Why do you think God healed you? Because people pray for healing all the time. She said, I don't know. One thing, though, that's interesting is that when she was laying in that bed for years, and she said, my mind was fine. I was curled like a pretzel, though. But my mind was fine. And I thought, what could I do with my mind? I know what I can do. I can pray for other people. So she spent years of her life in bed as an invalid praying for other people. And I wonder if God, in his grace and in his love.
Now it's your turn.
Said, it's your turn. It's your turn. I don't know that, but I wouldn't put it past God.
You know, one of the most dramatic miracles that I've encountered was with regard to Pete Maravich.
Yes.
He was one of the finest basketball players ever.
Incredible.
Probably some people consider him in the top five. He was magic before magic was magic.
Pistol Pete, they called him.
That was his nickname. Yeah. And I had become acquainted with him toward the end of his life. In fact, on the last day of his life. And he told me that he had not been a good man. But when he finished his basketball career, his knees were bothering him. And so he couldn't leave the house because people hounded him. So he stayed in his house for 2 years. And wow. He was totally miserable, absolutely miserable, because he had nothing to live for. His career was over. And he just stayed there in a state of depression. Mm. He said that one morning he heard his name. He was in bed asleep. He heard his name. Mm. He sat up in bed, and he looked around, and he heard it again, and it called him. He got out of his bed, got on his knees, and gave his heart to the Lord.
Wow.
And from that time, for the next 5 years, he couldn't talk about anything but his love for Christ and what
Isn't
he had done
great?
For him. And I was playing basketball with him when he died. I don't know if you know that story.
Yeah.
He had a
I did not know, though, about God calling his voice.
He had a T-shirt on that said, "Looking Unto Jesus." Mm. He knew where that power came from and that forgiveness came from. And he was filled with it 5 years later.
Wow.
And then he suddenly collapsed in front of me and died in my arms. Mm. But he's in heaven today because of a miracle.
How do you explain that? How do you you can't. You know, one of the amazing phenomenon that's going on around the world is that God is reaching Muslims in closed countries, close to the gospel, directly through dreams. What's happening is half of Muslims are illiterate, so they can't read the Gospels. 85% don't know a Christian.
Is that true? 85% have never met a committed Christian?
Yeah, don't know a committed Christian. And so what is God doing in his love? He's reaching them directly through dreams. And it's a remarkable phenomenon. And they're validated. I'll tell you how I mean that. There was a Muslim woman married to a Muslim man. She's in the Middle East in a closed country. She calls out, she said, "God, I don't feel you're there. Allah, where are you? I don't feel a connection with you. I want to know you. Please show me who you are." And she was very empty in her Muslim faith. They moved to Houston, and she has a dream. And in this dream, there's a lake, and there's a man standing next to her in the lake with a book, and the man is looking off in the horizon, and he's weeping. Now, she doesn't know anything about baptism. She's never heard of baptism. So she has this dream, and it's the most vibrant, real dream that she's ever experienced. She meets a woman from our church. The woman invites her to come to Easter services at our church. She comes to Easter services. She sits down, and she sees a man walking up the aisle. His name is Alan Splawn. He's one of our pastors who does baptisms. And Alan's walking up. She says, "You're the man. You're the one from my dream. I saw you in my dream."
Wow.
They lead her to faith in Christ, and sure enough, he baptizes her in the pond, just as that dream foretold. So there's an external validation, which is, I met someone in my dream who I don't know who he is, but then I meet him in real life. And in these dreams, for instance, there was one in Egypt where a mother of several children had a dream about Jesus, and it was a vibrant dream. And she said, "Tell me more about you." And Jesus said to her, "My friend will tell you." And she said, "Who's your friend?" And he said, "He's here." And there was a man there. And so the next day, she goes to the market in Cairo on a Friday. It's very crowded. And she sees a man, and it's him. And she goes up, "You're the man. You were in my dream. I saw you. You were in the same clothes. You're with the same glasses. You're the man." Well, he was a Christian missionary.
Oh.
And he was able to share the gospel with her. So there's this external validation that often takes place in these dreams. But it reminds me of that story about Pete Maravich, because God in his love will do what's necessary, to those who are sincerely seeking him and sincerely want to know him, the one true God. He will reach out.
Now, Lee, it seems to me that we really ought to deal with the other half of this coin. What do you do when God says no?
Right.
And he does say no on occasion. He's sovereign. Yeah. It will be his choice. I've never seen anybody stand up in front of an entire audience and say, you can all be healed today. It doesn't work that way.
That's right.
It's a highly individual thing.
That's right. And all the apostles weren't able to heal all the time.
Good people died.
That's right. My wife is chronically ill. She suffers from fibromyalgia, and it's an incurable condition that no medication has been able to help her. She's in pain every day of her life. And we've certainly prayed for God to heal her, and he has not. And I knew I could not write a book on miracles without dealing with this question. So I went to a man who has a PhD in philosophy, Dr. Douglas Grotius of Zenver Seminary. His wife, at a young age, is dying from dementia. She, at this point, does not know what a hairbrush is. She doesn't know what a telephone is. She's only in her 50s. And so they have prayed for God to heal her, and he has not chosen, for whatever reason, to heal her. Well, because he's a philosopher and because he's suffering personally from this, he was able to talk with such depth of emotion and intellect. It is the most powerful chapter I've ever written in any book. And what does he say about it? He says, you know, God is sovereign, and God will do as God will do. And he says, at some point, it's appropriate to pray what's called the prayer of relinquishment. And the prayer of relinquishment is what Jesus prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Not my will, but thine.
Not my will, but your will. That where we say, God, we've been praying for my wife to be healed for years now, and it has not happened. And perhaps it's not in your will to happen in this world. We know in the next world she will be healed. Apparently, for whatever reason, we don't understand. Your ways are not our ways. Your ways are above our ways. Help us through this. Help us learn from this. Help us grow through this. Help us cope with this. But Lord, we give this situation to you, and we trust you. Our faith is not in the healing. It is in God.
That's right.
And if we make our faith on the healing, that becomes a false god. That I will only love you, God, if you heal my wife.
Yeah, see, here's what concerns me. When God does say no, mm-hmm. and in fact, I wrote a book called When God Does Make Sense, they really need help, because spiritually, that's deep water.
Yes.
And if you are in agony or you are losing ground and you see death coming and you pray a prayer, an agonized prayer for healing, and sometimes God says no, what are you left with? One, God is not really there. Mm. Two, maybe there's unbroken sin in my life that's not confessed. That's what people come running at you with.
Right.
They say, if you,
they
you know.
Put the guilt on you.
That's right. Yeah. There are four or five of those, and they're all bad.
Yeah.
They all lead to spiritual confusion and depression. So when we talk about miracles, we also have to say, God will do what God will do.
Yeah.
And sometimes he does wonderful things. He did for me.
Yeah.
I had a stroke, and 24 hours later, I was well.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't happen.
Right.
That just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But I will die too when my time comes.
And we know that ultimately healing will come. But you're right, in the depth of the suffering, it is at that point where our faith can be in jeopardy. And that's the point where we have to say, I'm not going to create a God out of my illness, and that I'm only going to worship the God who chooses at this point to heal me in the way I want to be healed. But my God is sovereign. My God will choose what he wants to do. His ways are above my ways. And if in his ways it is better for me to be in this situation, then I'm going to trust him in this. As difficult, as hard as it is, I'm going to trust him. That's where my wife has come to after years and years and years of suffering. It is, I trust God. And she can say, I can authentically look at what I've gone through and look at all the ways I've grown spiritually, all the ways I've learned, all the lessons I've learned, how my faith has been deepened because of it. Because I didn't run from God in the midst of my pain, I ran to him in the midst of my pain.
The best example, or perhaps the most disturbing example, is Johnny Erickson Tada.
Yeah.
You know, why was she 17 when she broke her neck?
Yeah.
She's been a wheelchair
in a wheelchair
50 years. Mm. And you know she's prayed every prayer
sure.
that's possible to be prayed. She's been prayed for by faith healers. Yeah. She has been.
But look what God has done through
what
her suffering.
Done.
Oh, my goodness.
He chose a different path for her.
He did. And thousands of people have come to faith and will spend eternity in heaven because he chose to use her and her situation to reach them with the gospel.
See, that's why she's one of the greatest women in America.
She is.
Because she let God have it.
And to think, you know, when she laid on that gurney right after the accident as a teenager, realizing I'm paralyzed for life, and she said, I wanted to kill myself. And you think of that, and you think of the fact that how God has redeemed this situation and used her in such a mighty way and grown her in incredible ways spiritually, with such depth and such, you think what a tragedy it would have been for her to react in that moment in that way. But, you know, she's a woman who, as you said, is one of the greatest women of faith in the world today, not in spite of her condition, but because of her condition.
That's right.
She would not be who she is today had she not gone through that.
Yeah. Well, I have your book in front of me. It's called Case for Miracles, A Journalist Investigates Evidence for the Supernatural by Lee Strobel.
We did it just before Easter because of there's a chapter on the resurrection in there, a chapter on the biggest miracle, which is the creation of the universe from nothing that God created and the evidence for that. And then the most important miracle, which was the death of Christ on the cross for our sins and then his resurrection from the dead.
Oh. You're a great writer, Lee, and a great friend of mine. And you love the Lord with all your heart. I know that. And you're speaking all over the country.
Yeah, it's fun, you know.
In what kind of venues? Where can people find you?
You know, churches, seminars. I do a lot of fundraising for charities, for the American Bible Society and for Christian universities and the American Leprosy Society and things like that.
You had an internet
I do,
address.
LeeStrobel.com, and I'm on Twitter, at LeeStrobel. I love Twitter because it's like Journalism Day. It's like a headline. My buddy Mark Middleberg and I wrote a book once about living the Christian life, and we called it The Unexpected Adventure because you don't know what's going to happen. But you know what? If you're following Christ, you know you're on the right path. You
I'm
know
glad
you're doing the right thing.
He doesn't tell me what's
I know.
Coming.
That's true.
I don't want to know. I would like to live it out
have
that surprise,
exactly.
That expectation.
It's that joy. There's nothing like it. I mean, I look back at the years that I sought answers in a bottle and in other ways that were just self-destructive. And now I look at, you know, not only living for Christ, and but the influence that has on my family, my children, my grandchildren, and it's the best.
Are you working on another book?
Just starting to. My buddy Mark Middleberg and I just finished a curriculum that we're doing based on our movie, The Case for Christ, which tells my
story.
Where
can people find that?
That's on Netflix, and it's also available on DVD and Blu-ray at any place that has those available.
Describe it.
It's a story of my journey from atheism to faith and the turmoil in our marriage. It's dramatic with actors and actresses, set in 1980 in the film. It's so well done. We got an A-plus from CinemaScore, which is a secular rating service. It only gives 2 a year. And we've had people come to faith. One church rented a movie theater in Australia, showed the movie, and 22 people came to faith right there in the theater. So we've been so grateful how God has used it evangelistically.
Hey, thanks for coming and be with us in this little gathering today.
Glad to do it.
It's always good to be with you.
Love being with you. Thank you.
Amen. Give our love to your family.
I will. Thank you. You too.
Well, you've been listening to Family Talk and the second half of Dr. Dobson's inspiring and helpful conversation with apologist and best-selling author Lee Strobel. Over the past 2 days, they've been talking about Lee's book, The Case for Miracles, A Journalist Investigates Evidence for the Supernatural. If you missed any part of this 2-day conversation, remember you can listen to the entire dialogue when you visit drjamesdobson.org/Family Talk. Now, let me ask you a question. Are you a kind person? Are you sure about that answer you just gave? According to our friend, best-selling author and researcher Shanti Feldhahn, the majority of us actually aren't as kind as we think we are. In response to that finding, the JDFI decided to partner with Shanti and her team to provide their 30-day kindness challenge to our listeners. When you join the challenge, you'll practice real, practical kindness toward one person for 30 days in hopes of improving your relationship with that person. You'll learn about everything from unspoken simple acts of grace and love, the ability to avoid sarcasm in your daily speech, like that would ever happen, the simple kind act of recognition or praise to lift up that person in your life that you desire a better relationship with. And get this, Shanti's research has found that 89% of relationships improve as a result of taking part in the Kindness Challenge, and it is completely free for you to participate. You can start anytime this month, but why not sign up right now, today? Just go to drjamesdobson.org/kindness challenge. When you sign up, you'll receive an email with all the details about the challenge. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us here on Family Talk. I'd like to invite you to listen again next time for another compelling, encouraging broadcast. This is Roger Marsh for Dr. James Dobson, encouraging you to go out there and make a difference.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.